Many scientists marvel at how the laws of physics seem finely tuned for life. For instance, if gravity were just a little bit stronger, stars would burn out too quickly for planets to form and for life to evolve. If gravity were just slightly weaker, red giant stars would never produce the fusion needed to form the heavier atoms necessary for life. Likewise, if the strong nuclear force were just a bit stronger, protons and neutrons couldn't bind together to form hydrogen, or water, the elixir of life. And so on. There are, literally, dozens of laws of physics that have to be just right for life even to be possible. Some scientists call this the anthropic principle. It's an idea that British cosmologist Paul Davies explores in his book Cosmic Jackpot. He told Steve Paulson that we simply cannot dismiss this cosmic fine-tuning as a lucky fluke.
All my career I've been fascinated by the fact that the universe looks not just beautiful, not just intriguing, but in some sense deeply ingenious. The laws of physics seem to be just right for life.
And you're suggesting that it seems to be more than just coincidence that they are just right.
That's right. I think to just shrug this aside and say, well, if it wasn't that way, we wouldn't be here, would we, is no answer to the question. It's just choosing to sweep it under the carpet.
But that is the most common response of scientists, that it's just a lucky fluke that we're here, that all
right.
of these physical laws happen to be just so, and so that carbon could be formed, the Earth could develop, human beings could arise. We happen to be here to be able to see all of that, but there's no inherent reason for any of that.
I think you're absolutely right that most scientists would say, well, that's it, it's a lucky fluke, and if it hadn't happened, we wouldn't be here, and so we won't bother to ask what's going on. Now, that point of view might have been tenable 20 years ago when the laws of physics were simply regarded as just there, just sort of God-given or existing for no reason. It wasn't the job of the scientists to ask why those laws or where did the laws come from. But increasingly over the last 20 years, with the search for the final unification of physics, there's been more and more of a thrust towards saying, well, we won't just accept the laws of physics as given. We'll ask, how did those laws come to be? Are they the ultimate set of laws? We to suppose they were just magically imprinted on the universe at the moment of the Big Bang for no particular reason, and that the form they have has no explanation?
There are different versions of the anthropic principle. Can you briefly lay those out for us?
Yes, people often talk about the weak, the strong, and the final anthropic principles. The weak anthropic principle, nobody could really object to. It just says that the laws and conditions of the universe must be consistent with life. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. Now, the weak anthropic principle on its own doesn't tell us very much. But if we combine it with a multiverse hypothesis, then we're in business. Now, the multiverse hypothesis says what we've been calling the universe all along is nothing of the kind. It's just a bubble, a little local region in a much vaster and more elaborate system called the multiverse. And the multiverse consists of lots of universes. There are different ways you can arrange this, but one way is to have them scattered throughout space. And each universe would be a gigantic bubble, much bigger than the size of what we can see at the moment. But there would be many, many bubbles, and each of these bubbles would come with their own set of laws.
Just so I understand this, I mean, all those, what are assumed to be billions of galaxies in our universe, that's still just one universe. And in this
that's
theory,
right.
There would be many such universes like this.
Everything else, as far as our most powerful instruments can penetrate, would belong to just one universe, this universe. I'd like to call this a Hubble bubble. So we're talking about a distance of, you know, out to nearly 14 billion light years. But eventually, if you travel far enough in any direction, you would reach the edge of that bubble, and then there'd be a chasm of exceedingly rapidly expanding space, and then you'd come to another bubble. And then you would find that only in a tiny, tiny fraction of those bubbles would all the conditions be right so that there can be life. And of course, it's no surprise we find ourselves living in such a life-encouraging bubble because we couldn't live in any of the others.
What is the strong anthropic principle, which is far more controversial?
The strong anthropic principle says that there is, in some sense, an element of compulsion, that the universe must bring forth life and observers at some stage. So even if there's only one universe, it must be the case that this universe will end up being observed by beings such as ourselves. Now, that's much harder for scientists to swallow because it seems to turn everything upside down. It gives mind and consciousness a central place in the great scheme of things.
Well, it also sounds fairly religious. I mean, let's face it, the standard explanation for how all of this happened was God did it. God set this in motion so that human beings could eventually evolve.
Right. So you could give this either both a religious or an anti-religious interpretation. The religious interpretation is that God made the universe just as it is in order that life and conscious beings may emerge. The other way, which I suppose would be anti-religious, is to say that in some manner, the emergence of life and observers causes the universe to have the laws that it does. Now that, when I say puts the cart before the horse, that is pretty much literally, from the causal sense, what I mean. It makes the emergence of life and observers later on in the universe have some responsibility for the way the laws come into being at the beginning.
Is this what John Wheeler, the famous physicist, talked about when he made the case for a participatory universe?
Yes. So now we're into another version, another variant of this anthropy principle, which is sometimes called the participatory or even the final anthropy principle, where somehow the emergence of life and, in particular, observers link back to the early universe and ensure that the laws of physics and the initial conditions are such that observers emerge. Now, this has some appeal, and the reason it has some appeal is because the conventional theistic explanation of the universe and the conventional scientific explanation of the universe both suffer from the same shortcoming, in my view, which is that they attempt to explain the universe by appealing to something outside it. In the case of the religious explanation, appeal is made to an unexplained God who simply has to be there in order that the universe should be created with the form it has. In the case of the scientific explanation, the laws of physics just happily exist for no particular reason, and they just happen to have exactly the right properties, but it's all unexplained, and it's all pushed off to outside of the universe totally. What appeals to me about John Wheeler's idea is that it attempts to provide an explanation for the biofriendliness of the universe from entirely within it. Now, the difficult point about all this is we have to explain how the existence of life today can have any effect on the laws that the universe emerged with at the time of the Big Bang.
Right. I mean, this sounds like it's coming right out of science fiction here, that somehow future people can go back in time and have something to do with the creation of the universe. It's pretty far-fetched.
It is pretty far-fetched until you stop to think that there is nothing in the laws of physics that singles out one direction of time over another. The laws of physics work forward in time and work backward in time equally well. But the particular mechanism that Wheeler had in mind has to do with quantum physics. Now, quantum physics is based on Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. This uncertainty principle works both ways in time. There's no doubt about this. That is to say that if we make an observation of an atom in a certain state now, then its past is uncertain, just as its future is uncertain. And so one way of thinking about that is that the present state of the universe, which of course includes observers by definition, we're here, there will be many past histories that will lead up to this point. And so what this means is that there is an element in which observations made here and now have an effect not only in the future, but in the past. It's possible to do experiments in the lab to demonstrate this. You can't use it to send signals back in time. You can't send information back into the past. But the nature of the quantum state in the past cannot be separated from the nature of the quantum state in the present.
So you're saying this is just through the act of observation itself. I mean, through the fact, for instance, that human beings are aware, you know, have intelligence and are aware of the universe. I mean, that in itself might, through some weird mechanism of quantum physics, be able to explain this. I mean, you're not talking about super smart creatures in the far future who go back and somehow fiddle with the laws of physics to create the Big Bang.
Right. But I'm not talking about time travel. There have been various science fiction and serious science speculations about that type of gerrymandering with the universe, that some super civilization goes back in time and fixes things up to make a self-consistent loop. No, this is just standard quantum physics. Standard quantum physics says that if you make an observation of something today, and it might just be the position of an atom, then there's an uncertainty about what that atom is going to do in the future. There's an uncertainty about what it's going to do in the past. Einstein called this spooky action at a distance. What I'm suggesting, this is the radical departure, is that the laws of physics themselves are subject to the same quantum uncertainty, so that an observation performed today will select not only a number of histories from an infinite number of possible past histories, but will select a subset of the laws of physics which are consistent with the emergence of life. And that's the radical departure. It's not the backward in time aspect, which has been established by experiment, and there's really no doubt that quantum mechanics opens the way to linking future with past in that manner. It's that it's suggesting we extend those notions from the state of the universe to the underlying laws of physics themselves. That's the radical step.
Just so I'm clear on what you're saying, I mean, you're saying that somehow built into the very origins of the universe, I mean, if you go back to those first few seconds, somehow the laws were put in place so that intelligent life would arise billions of years later? Am I right about that?
You could be wrong if what you're suggesting is that therefore there exists an intelligent designer who figured it all out and created the universe with a set of laws that would bring intelligent beings into existence. That's not what I'm saying.
You want to stay away from the God word.
I want to stay away from a pre-existing cosmic magician who is there within time for all eternity and then brings the universe into being as part of a preconceived plan, because I think that's just a naive, silly idea that doesn't fit the theological leanings of most theologians these days and doesn't fit the scientific facts. I don't want that. That's a horrible idea. But I see no reason why there can't be a teleological component in the universe that is part of the evolution of the universe, includes things like meaning and purpose, and that the laws of physics which we've been discussing are weirdly bio-friendly need an explanation for that, and that explanation could be connected to the very existence of being. So I'm talking about a self-synthesizing, self-explaining universe in which the existence of life and observers arising billions of years after the Big Bang have some effect on the nature of the laws that emerge from the Big Bang through the various sorts of causal loops that we've been talking about.
Cosmologist Paul Davies talked with Steve Paulson about his book Cosmic Jackpot. Davies has received numerous awards, including the Templeton Prize and the Faraday Prize from the Royal Society in London.